From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Right alongside the internet came the idea of the horizontal workforce structure, not vertical, with the big boss way up high surrounded by middle managers, but flat, almost bossless, everybody pitching in. So how's that going? This hour On Point, the bossless workplace. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you got it? Have you tried it? Do you dream of it? The bossless workplace. How's the flat, new school, egalitarian workplace working out? Has it really come to pass? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear a lot of interesting voices today. With us first from Rockport, Maine, is Matt Scher. His New York Magazine story, headlined "The Boss Stops Here," appears in the current issue. Matt Scher, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What did you find out there, Matt?
Well, I spent about 2 days at a software company called Menlo Innovations, which is in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yeah.
They develop software for a range of companies around the Ann Arbor area. And Menlo has about 50 employees, and they do have a CEO and a chief operating officer, but for the most part, all the work is done in teams. So effectively, what they've done is eliminated middle managers. All employees deal directly with clients. All employees structure their own day within the confines of the team. They decide how they're going to approach a particular problem. And they also decide who gets hired, who gets fired. And, you know, this is all done on a collective basis. So for me, it was an interesting experience. The only places I've ever worked are sort of top-down environments, which news organizations tend to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it both, you know, I found it both fascinating and I'll admit to a little bit of jealousy on my part, because I do think that employees in this kind of environment often are happier when they do have more control over their day-to-day workflow.
We're going to talk with the president of that company in Ann Arbor, Menlo Innovations, but what about the employees? How did they describe to you the difference in this kind of company structure, Matt, and how it works, and maybe how it doesn't work as well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that you do have a workforce that is self-selecting to a certain degree. We're taught now, you know, you flip open a magazine, let's say like Fortune magazine, it's about getting to the top. It's
yeah.
about being a business leader. These people are young, you know, they're in their 20s, they're in their early 30s, and they have come to Menlo because they believe in the team ethic and they believe in the product that they're creating. So to some degree, of course, it's self-selecting. And also the interview process is fascinating because what it amounts to is a sort of hiring by committee. So everybody who comes in at Menlo has already met everybody else and indeed has already been vetted by everybody else. So you don't, you know, conflict to a certain extent has been eliminated beforehand. But of course it is, you know, your attitude has to be very different. You're not just pleasing one boss, you're pleasing an entire team. Now that can make you extremely happy if again that's something that you enjoy, but it can also be, I think, a little overwhelming. You're always on your guard a little bit, right? I mean, if you're surrounded by 49 people with the ability to hire and fire you, you're much more careful than you would be if you only had one boss directly above you. So I think that it does change. There's a certain amount of alliances that happen on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, also the workday, there are no breaks. You know, if you think about a traditional workday in a traditional office where you might have, you know, a couple minutes where you duck away from the big boss while he's out getting his coffee.
Right.
That could never happen at Menlo because everybody's the boss to a certain extent. So people describe being very initially exhausted by that routine, although I think they did come to like it overall.
Boy, this is really interesting. You call it bossless for a minute, but then everybody's your boss in another sense. What about just the workflow or how direction occurs? I mean, in the old model, you'd have the big boss who would sit down with the middle managers, the sort of minor chieftains, and they would come up with a strategy, and then he would tell them to go implement it. How does a company without the middle management tier here, you know, how does that flow? How do they come up with their strategy? Who's responsible to implement it? Where does the buck stop?
Well, it is interesting, too, insofar as that the workflow is slower, and I think this is something that applies to all team-based organizations. One of the great benefits to having a boss is a boss is able to get something done very quickly, right? A boss says, okay, we need this done. We'll have it done. You're going to do it this way. But in a team-based environment, it's necessarily much slower. So what happens is they get together once a week, typically, at the beginning of a project, and everyone sort of comes up with a plan of attack. This takes about 2 to 3 hours. They call it kickoff. And everyone sort of assigns his or her own role. And then they spend the next week implementing it. And then there's another meeting at the end of the week where they kind of self-analyze how far they've gotten and how much still needs to be done. And it's interesting, meetings with clients, too, are on a group basis, which I found to be perhaps the most fascinating. It's not one project manager meeting directly with a client. It's the 15 employees who are assigned to this project all meeting with the client at the same time.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a collective process. It is slower. I will say that. It is much slower.
Bossless, but in another way, lots of bosses. Everybody's a boss, in a sense. This has caught on in some places, not in others. We're looking at it with Matt Scher. He writes the big piece in New York Magazine, The Boss Stops Here. Matt, stand by there in Rockport, Maine. I want to go to Ann Arbor, where the company you're looking a lot at here, Menlo Innovations, is based. Richard Sheridan joins us from Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan. He's president of the software firm Menlo Innovations. Richard Sheridan, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Have you done it both ways, the old vertical way, and now this way, the bossless format? Have you done it both ways, Richard?
Absolutely. I was a vice president of R&D at a public company here in Ann Arbor and worked my way up the ladder like all of my peers were trying to do and eventually got into that corner office.
Okay, so you are the president. So are you not the boss of this company?
Well, I'm certainly a visionary leader for the company. I'm one of the co-founders. Menlo wouldn't exist had I not one day woke up and said, this is something I want to go do.
Yeah.
But I can assure you that as I'm sitting here today talking with you, I'm not thinking about, oh, I hope they're all back there working on the right stuff, because I know they are. And it's not because I did that. They organized that work and they know what needs to be done.
I'm looking at a Forbes article here from, I don't know, a year and a half ago. You know, going boss free is the headline, Utopia or Lord of the Flies. How do you bend this toward creativity, happiness, greatness, and not toward, you know, backbiting and Lord of the Flies, Richard?
Sure. Yeah, I never want to confuse what looks like a simple structure with something that's easy to implement.
Mm-hmm.
If there's listeners out there who want to say, boy, I'd love to do this. Let's start tomorrow. You probably would have chaos. Maybe you would have Lord of the Flies. I mean, this is a culture you carefully build up over time. And in our view of the world, we didn't trade bureaucracy for chaos. We traded it for structure. And the structure is well understood, and it's a shared belief system that, as Matt said, people buy into. And so we try and be very open and transparent even in the recruiting and interviewing and onboarding process so that the people who are joining the team buy into the system that we've created.
If you collectively set a goal with your leadership, let's say, and it's got a timetable and targets, and those aren't met, who's responsible?
So every week we lay out a set of goals for the team, and it's clear, it's unambiguously clear to everyone what the goals are. And as Matt said, we get together in this kickoff meeting, we talk about what the goals are, we execute on it for a week, and then at the end of the week we go through a review with our client called Show and Tell, and we describe to him exactly what happened. The most important thing is to keep fear out of the mix, mm-hmm. because we didn't solve the problem somehow magically of did we get everything done we said we would or didn't we. That problem still exists for us just like it does for every company. I think in a lot of hierarchical organizations, a lot of fear-based bureaucracies, the bad news tends to go underground and gets hidden long enough so you don't have a little problem anymore to deal with. You have a big one.
You technically don't have middle managers now, but do you still, among those 50 employees, have like your go-to squad who you check in with? I mean, just logistically, how would you check in equally with all 50 employees?
Well, number one, I want to make sure that as we talk about vocabulary, that bossless doesn't mean leaderless.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain roles in the team, much like any team. You know, you think of a sports team. There's a quarterback. He calls the plays. There's a running back who gets the ball, and there's a front line that opens up a hole, hopefully through the defense, so he can run through. And then, you know, he either gets – you know, he fumbles the ball and defense deals with it, or he gets through for 3 yards and they set up the next play and it's going to be a pass and somebody else is involved. It's a lot more like that than it is, oh my gosh, you know, look, you know, Bill didn't get this done. Let's go all jump on Bill and make sure he knows he should never mess up like that again. It's just not like that. It's a team.
Richard Sheridan is with us. He's president of the software firm Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Bossless, not leaderless, company going on there. Matt Scheer writes about that and more for New York Magazine in the current issue. The Boss Stops Here is the piece. He's with us from Rockport, Maine. Rick Ross here and Dre with Boss. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Run how you want, boss. Chill how you want, boss. Floss how you want, boss. Do what you like, boss. Go rock your chain, boss. Pour that champagne, boss. Keep getting paid, boss. Do what you like, what you like. Gross. La la. Gross. La la. Gross. La la. Do what you like, what you like. Gross. La la.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the bossless workplace. Fewer bosses, more leaders from all levels. The flat org chart and how that movement is going. It's definitely out there in popular culture. Maybe the yearning forward. Here's a scene from the final season of NBC's The Office. Dunder Mifflin Scranton branch manager Andy Bernard, played by Ed Helms, returns from an unapproved 3-month vacation in the Caribbean. The boss is off. Only to find that the office has run better without him. He gets jealous and takes it out on Dwight, played by Rainn Wilson, who made the biggest sale the company's ever had while the boss, Andy, was gone.
I noticed that you landed the Scranton White Pages account. That is tremendous.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, there's one problem. Couldn't help but notice that you offered a price point that was not approved by the head office. So, gotta run that stuff by me, Dwight.
You were on a boat.
I was...
on a boat.
That.
In the ocean.
Okay, the issue is that you need to run this stuff by me. Coolio, are we Coolio?
No.
Are we Coolio with the boss? No, we are not. And here's Fox. They've just come out with a new reality TV show called Does Someone Have to Go? One reviewer called it The Office Meets Survivor. And here, two bosses of the Chicago-based Velocity Merchant Services Company decide to hand over control of the company to their employees.
Okay, gang, can I get your attention?
You need everybody to gather around.
Complacency that we've created for ourselves is hindering our growth. You guys have to step up to the plate and actually do something about it.
We're going to put the power of this company in your hands.
What? So wait a minute. Does this mean that we have to collectively make the decision?
As a group.
How does that work? So I say I want to fire you, Sean. You're going to say, no, I'm the boss. I'm going to fire you, Nancy.
And off we go. Fox's new reality show there. Matt Scheer wrote it all up for New York Magazine. He's with us from Rockport, Maine. Richard Sheridan is president of Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan. 50 employees, bossless staff, not leaderless, he points out. We'll look more at that distinction. Hey, Matt, take us into the nuts and bolts of this. How does it work, for example? Who decides what people are going to be paid, and who knows who's paid what in Menlo, Matt?
Well, Rich can talk a little bit more about this, but I think this is something that a few companies that I cover in the piece are still dealing with. It's kind of the final frontier in terms of, or at least how I looked at it, is the final frontier. Okay, we've got a bossless environment, but now are we going to go the full nine yards and actually get payout in the open? At Menlo, I know this is something they're experimenting with. When I visited, there was a chart that showed the pay scales of the different employees, and people could put their names up there. Not everybody had done it. Almost everybody had done it. And I spoke at length with some of the folks at a tomato processing firm out in California that is also bossless, and they are experimenting with the same thing. I think that you're dealing with something very different from the traditional team setup when you go into this sort of when you do introduce compensation and you make that public in a certain way. I think, you know, people's feelings are very tied to how they're seen. You know, we're used to thinking of our worth at a company as tied to how much we're paid, tied to our compensation. And when it's out there, it can be a little bit frightening.
We've got a lot of people responding here. Comments on Facebook. Emma says, I was a worker owner at a worker-owned cafe and bookstore, Firestorm Cafe and Books in Asheville, North Carolina, for a couple of years. She writes, it was a fabulous experience with a team of hardworking, self-motivated individuals. Dave says, my workplace runs fine when the boss is gone. Sylvie says, the lazy ones would be able to be even more lazy, and the bullies would take the room from them for themselves and not do a thing. Richard Sheridan, what about how motivation works and employee, I don't know, responsibility in the absence of that omnipresent boss man, boss lady?
You know, I was taught it early on as a manager that I should walk around the room and poke my head into cubicles in my old life and say, hey, how's it going? What you working on? Are you almost done?
Yeah.
And that was my way of motivating people. And I'll tell you, I hated that guy when he did it to me, and I hated being that guy eventually because that's how I learned to manage early on. There is, I think, no better motivation than focusing the attention of your team on a goal external to the team itself. What are we trying to accomplish in the world? Assembling around that external goal and then trusting that the team believes in each other, believes in the system you've created, and moves towards that goal. And now you have a camaraderie. You don't have people at each other's throats trying to say, well, I'm going to get ahead of you. You know, Deming talked about this when he talked about the annual performance review so many years ago. And he said it's probably one of the most egregious tools American management has ever created because it tends to pit one person over another. I'm going to get ahead because you're not. And we just eliminated that.
Deming, father of quality control. Would this work in any business, or is there something about software that makes it particularly amenable to the flat org chart, Richard?
Well, I've certainly seen other organizations come and visit us and take away pieces and parts and implement it. There's a patent attorney out in San Francisco that does this with his patent office. I think Matt probably has a lot of other examples. There's a whole organization that kind of studies organizations that think like this. It's called World Blue. A woman by the name of Tracy Fenton founded this, and their tagline is the world's most democratic workplaces. And just to be clear, that doesn't mean we vote on everything. It just espouses a lot of democratic principles like dignity and respect and transparency and inclusiveness.
Matt, share, in spite of all those things, if you accomplish them, let's say somebody doesn't work out and it's time for someone maybe to go, how does that work in this situation? Is it like Survivor? You meet by torchlight and vote them out?
I don't think it works quite like that, although I do think that it's a group process. I think it tends to be slow is what happens at these different companies. It tends to be a process of many discussions over a series of weeks usually because you want to make sure, first of all, that it's not just you who's not getting along with someone. And the way that I've heard it described, and Rich can talk about this as well, as you try to get it out into the open. That's one of the great benefits of a bossless, team-based environment. You try to get conflict in the open where it can get resolved first. So in that situation, let's say it might be a group sit-down where you talk about a problem that the two employees are having. And then from there, it would go through a series of committees, and if it does turn out that everybody is not getting along with this person, they would have to go. I think in a lot of ways it's a more fair way of doing things insofar as that, as Rich said, this is Menlo specifically is a company that rises and falls on the production of a team. So if a team as a whole feels held back by a certain individual or feels like a certain individual isn't working out with the overall ethos of the company, it makes sense that the team should be the one to decide to let he or she go.
And Richard, what about compensation? Does it tend to be flatter in a company where there's a flat sort of a work organization? Does compensation tend to follow that?
Tom, we have five different categories of people and three levels within each category. So there's actually 15 different pay grades, if you will, at Menlo. One of the remarkable things about our process is there's no reward for time in service, time in place. So if you are an associate level three, which is our kind of our early, the first level people coming in, and you become associate one, two, three. If you're an associate level three and I'm an associate level three,
yep,
we're both making the exact same amount of money, regardless of you've been there 2 years, I've been there five.
But you've got 15 pay grades, but of course they could be spread out over, you know, millions of dollars in difference, or they could be clustered.
Oh.
Are they more closely clustered, do you think, because it's flat org?
I can't wait for the team to hear my answer to this question. No, it's not millions of dollars of difference. we're talking about the tradition of an entry-level job out of college at the associate level one up to compensation for a very well-paid professional in our industry at the top level.
So you think it follows pretty much a normal distribution across pay levels?
Absolutely. Huh. I mean, we have to be competitive in the workplace. And I will tell you, we are not at the high end of the pay scale, but I think we offer a lot of intangibles that cause people to want to stay with Menlo, even though they could go make more money elsewhere.
Richard, stand by there in Ann Arbor. Lynn is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm jealous. I'm one of those jealous people. I was a team player in a very top-down organization several times. And I found that my boss would tell me that because I wanted to solicit other ideas about things or problems, that I lacked confidence, I found it produced a better product. While the process may be slower, as your author mentioned, I wonder if you have fewer glitches because you kind of triage things right from the beginning and you get other input and people can bring up things that may, you know, come in glitches later on. So.
Yeah, because everybody's in on it. Lynn, let us pick it up. Matt, what did you see? What do you think? I mean, it's just a couple of days you were there, but are people making this case that it's more effective because everybody's in on the leadership?
Oh, sure. I think that is one of the biggest arguments for a team-based, bossless environment. If everybody's working on a product at the same time and everybody has a hand in every step of the process, as your caller mentioned, you are going to have troubleshooting is going to occur much earlier than it would in a process where a siloed process, let's say, where, you know, I'm building my little piece of code in my cubicle, and then at the end of 2 weeks, I'm going to cobble that little piece of code into the bigger software product. Who knows how it's going to turn out? But if everybody's working together and everyone kind of has a hand in it, it does tend to cut down on the problems.
Let's go to Danielle in Providence, Rhode Island. Danielle, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I have to laugh because I used the Lord of the Flies reference last night speaking to a coworker about our workplace. I'm a librarian in a public library, and we are in between directors right now. We have an interim director who is only there 2 to 3 days a week, and so we have every department head just jockeying for power, you know, telling the interim director one thing, the other one telling them another thing, and it's awful. It is miserable.
Do you think it's awful because you're built in a hierarchical way but don't have that big permanent boss there right now? Could it be better if it was sort of bossless but you were restructured somehow to roll better with that, Danielle?
I definitely think so. The hierarchy, we are definitely reliant on the hierarchy, and if one person is missing, it just throws things very much out of whack. And so, you know, right now I think it would definitely be easier, instead of having, you know, this interim person who just came in, to have maybe, you know, two or three of the librarians as a team sort of just managing the building and, you know, taking care of various issues.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies raging away in your workplace in this kind of betwixt and between state. I appreciate your call, Danielle. I want to welcome retired Navy Captain Mike Abrashoff into this conversation. He's joining us from St. Paul, Minnesota. He's co-founder of the talent development firm GLS Worldwide, was captain of the Navy destroyer, the USS Benfold, became famous for turning that ship and its crew from one of the Navy's most dysfunctional into a top-performing ship in the Pacific Fleet by applying what he calls grassroots leadership. He wrote a book about it called It's Your Ship, became a bestseller in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal lists. Captain Mike Abrashoff, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. How are you?
Fine. How did you put the grassroots leadership to work? And you were still the boss, weren't you, when you did it?
I like Rich's analogy of, you know, the leader of the organization as opposed to the boss. What I wanted my crew to know that nobody on that ship was better than anybody else, and that we had different roles, but at the end of the day, you know, nobody's better. And I wanted them to trust us instead of to fear us. So everything we tried to do was to drive fear out of the organization. And what I did as the leader was to lay out the requirements, and then the crew figured out how to meet those requirements. And what happened was the crew turned their own ship around from one of the worst to being the best. We were awarded the Spokane Trophy, and after it was the Spokane Trophy was an award started in 1908 by Theodore Roosevelt, given annually to the best ship in the Pacific Fleet. And we did that within about 18 months time frame using the same crew that was performing near the bottom. And what happened was I got an email from my admiral, and he says, you know, congratulations on winning this trophy. But he said, don't get too cocky and arrogant. When I had command of a ship in the Atlantic Fleet, my ship won the Battenberg Cup, which is the award for best ship in the Atlantic Fleet. And he said, oh, by the way, to this day, my ship still holds the Navy's record in gunnery of 103.6 out of a possible 105 right. points. He said, until you can beat my score in gunnery, you know, I don't want to hear
right.
from you.
Don't get too cocky. But why did it work to go grassroots? Why didn't it work just to more somehow effectively apply the old chain of command, Mike?
Because I don't think it's effective anymore. You know, the military invented the top-down command and control environment, but I don't think it works anymore when you have a highly educated workforce who is, you know, we're more globalized. We know what's going on in every other organization, and people are demanding more out of the work experience. And so I found that top-down doesn't inspire commitment. It doesn't create cohesion, and it doesn't get the results anymore. And, you know, when I got that email, I didn't tell the gunnery crew, we're going to get the Navy's record. I just taped it to the gun mount. They figured out how to get how to beat the admiral score, and we now have the record for the highest gunnery score in the entire Navy.
Wow. Mike Abershoff, stand by there. Richard Sheridan, I've got to let you go in half a minute here. Do you think you're further ahead? Are you committed to this path? Or is this your way for the long term, Richard?
You know, we often talk about joy at Menlo. We talk about the joyful outcomes of our team. I can tell you there was a long time in my career I was trapped in a world of fear, and I was helping promulgate that fear. The fear is gone, both for me and for our team. I'm back to joy in my career. I'm never going back. We've been doing this for 12 years. It works. It works for us, and it is a place I love to go to every single day.
Listen, joy is a big, big world, a word in my life. If you can motivate that way, bravo to you. Richard Sheridan, president of Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Thank you very much for being with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Tom.
Here's Jimmy Reed with Big Boss Man. This is On Point.
Got me waking, boss man, waking around the bar. I want a little rain or water. That you won't let Jimmy start, big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? Well, you ain't so big. You just told us all.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the bossless workplace. Fewer bosses, more leaders from all levels, the flat org chart, and how that movement is going. Matt Scher is with us. He's written up a bunch of cases of this for New York Magazine in the current issue. You can link to that through our website, onpointradio.org. Retired Navy Captain Mike Abershoff is with us as well from St. Paul, Minnesota. He's co-founder of the talent development firm GLS Worldwide, was captain of the Navy destroyer, the USS Benfold. It was in big trouble. He turned it around with what he calls grassroots leadership, wrote it up in a book called It's Your Ship, bestseller all over the place, and big props for that. Was awarded the prize for the top-performing ship in the Pacific Fleet after being right down toward the bottom, and did it with this kind of
leaderless or bossless structure here. Joins us from St. Paul. Monty Python had fun with this kind of idea way back in the day, 1975. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. King Arthur, played by Graham Chapman, is shocked to find that a group of peasants don't recognize him as their leader.
Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail, King Arthur's not buying it, but maybe he's not in charge anymore there. That's just great. One more guest with us right now from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Sherry Moss is here, professor of organizational studies at Wake Forest University. She blogs on work and work flexibility for the Huffington Post. Professor Moss, Sherry Moss, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We've been hearing about this for years. The flat organization, the horizontal organization seem to kind of come at us around the same time as the internet. How deeply has it taken off? How effective, how widespread is it, Sherry?
Well, these days with the type of workforce that we have, we've changed. Our workers are much more knowledgeable. They're much more educated, and they work with information, knowledge, and relationships. And so this type of atmosphere in the workplace has become much more popular. We've been seeing it, though, for decades. I mean, Volvo, for example, in Sweden, produces cars in leaderless teams. They have a team of 15 to 18 individuals that assemble the entire car from start to finish. We know at Whole Foods that we have teams managing departments, and they work very much like Menlo Innovations, and they have... they vote on who gets to work with them. They decide whether the person is performing up to their standards, and they can vote somebody off the team.
So they've got a lot of power right there. A lot of talk about this, and listeners responding from many angles here on Twitter. You know, Chris writes to us, Sherry says, sounds like anarchy. But Philip says managers just get in the way most of the time. Brian writes, my boss quit, and nobody officially replaced him. It's pretty awesome. But the hashtag is corporate anarchy. So when does it work and when does it not, Sherry?
I think that's a great question. I think we should not equate anarchy or leaderless or bossless offices with anarchy or chaos. In the absence of a strong hierarchy, you have to have some other kinds of coordinating mechanisms. You could hear when Matt was talking about Menlo that they have coordinating mechanisms for their work. They have a kickoff meeting. They have an end-of-the-week meeting. He talks about how people self-select into that kind of organization.
Yep.
The work of Richard Hackman, the late scholar from Harvard, talks about the different kinds of coordinating mechanisms you need to create a strong team in an egalitarian, in an egalitarian sense, as we're talking about.
Right. Not so boss-oriented, but with mechanisms. Sorry, Captain Ebershoff.
And Tom, far from creating anarchy, what I found, and I've got the statistical proof to prove it, is discipline actually increases when the employees feel that they're the owners, that they have something at stake, and that they're the one who are guiding the outcome. Because at the end of the day, the military is a very discipline-based organization, and far from creating anarchy, our disciplinary rate actually went down once the crew became more involved in the process.
I'm still trying to picture. We'll talk about how you did that within a military structure where chain of command is all. But Jeff in Oklahoma City is calling. Jeff, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to make the quick point that it seems like the current employment environment that we have in this country is based on the industrial model that was set up 100 years or ago or so. So is this a blueprint for the new realities of our economy that's no longer based on industry, or is this something that seems to be a passing fad?
Well, I mean, I guess that passing fad depends if the sort of creative economy is a passing fad. But Sherry, how about it? Is this part and parcel of a move away from the old industrial factory workplace to something more creatively oriented, or can it be applied in any kind of undertaking, enterprise?
I think it certainly is away from the old industrial model, and we need to move away from the old industrial model because our economy is not based on that kind of activity. It's based on the management of knowledge and information. And in order to harness the energy of those types of workers, we need different kinds of organizing principles. One of the things I found really interesting about the earlier conversation is Matt reported that decision-making is a lot slower in this bossless office at Menlo. And I agree with that. That is the case. And you'd think that'd be a disadvantage. And it might be in the very short term. But in the long term, if you have everybody coming to a consensus about what the work activities are and how they're going to do them, then you have a higher sense of commitment among the team members. And commitment translates into discretionary effort. People will not just do the minimum to get by. Mm-hmm. They will feel that their work is meaningful. They will be motivated by it, and they will do more, just like they did on Captain Mike's ship.
Sherry, Matt, I want to put this to you carefully. I'm not endorsing this. I'm just passing this on from a Twitter commenter, Senia, who asks Matt, what are the gender demographics at Menlo Innovations, the software company in Ann Arbor? She writes, I feel this would cause a catty disaster at my predominantly female company. I am not endorsing this, Matt, but what about the demographics?
That's a minefield. I think that Menlo seems to be, I don't want to hazard a guess on the exact demographic breakdown, but I think it's about half and half. Mm-hmm. And I think that rather than address it from a gender point of view, what I would do is address it from a demographic point of view, and this goes back to what we were just discussing, you know, whether this is going to be an emerging trend. And mm-hmm. I think that part of the reason why we're going to see more team-based environments is we have a generation of millennials entering the workplace who find reward from different places than, let's say, their parents or their grandparents did. They find reward from building something that they care about, from building a product that can change the world in a meaningful way, mm-hmm. and that's their reward rather than a gigantic salary or rather than a corner office. So certainly, I think in places where we do have, you know, the knowledge economy software, this is why one of the reasons why we see team-based so much in software companies is because you have a lot of young people, and this is the way that they prefer to work. As for cattiness, I mean, no one is denying, and Rich Sheridan from Menlo wouldn't deny it either, that, of course, when you have a team environment and you don't have, and it is bossless, of course there are going to be emotions, and of course it's going to get messy, and of course there's going to be whispering behind people's backs. But because it's all out in the open to a certain extent, those problems might get resolved a little bit more quickly. I mean, no one is going to let two people who are engaged, you know, who are furious at each other and they have to work on the same team as everyone else. It's in the whole team's best interest to get those two people to patch up their differences so everybody can move on.
Sherry Moss, pick both of those up if you would. Do we have a generational change in motivation dynamics that encourages this? And what about Xenia's question? Does gender matter here once you get into this kind of structure?
I agree. That's a minefield of a question.
Yes.
It turns out that women...
I don't know in which direction, honestly, because guys traditionally would... the stereotype there is that they would fight relentlessly for the higher rung on the ladder rather than go with the team dynamic. So I don't know.
And that's a good point. I think the kind of person who's really looking to climb the ladder is not the right type of person to work in this environment. And that person probably wouldn't select themselves into it, and they probably wouldn't want to be there for very long. But as far as women go, it turns out that they tend to be a little more participative on average than men, and they're more oriented toward creating harmony. And so a workplace full of women, I'm not sure about, but a workplace that includes a significant number of women, I think that they would do just fine.
Captain Abershoff here, Danny writes on Facebook, says, kind of resisting this idea, and he says, accountability is what's missing, not what we need less of. The presumption in his comment is that in a bossless office, you have less accountability. What about that, Mike?
I think accountability increases. And as captain of the ship, I was ultimately responsible and accountable for everything that went on. And if, you know, if there's an accident, I'm the one who gets fired first. But when you have a more disciplined workforce, I believe that you lessen the risk for complacency setting in, which leads to accidents and bad things happening. So I believe that the engagement of the workforce is the critical thing that keeps an organization safe and out of trouble, and that the top-down approach these days doesn't create that type of engagement where the employees feel like they've got a personal stake in the outcome.
How did you manage to make it more grassroots when the military is full of rank? Everywhere you turn, there's rank. So how do you have rank and you know, flat org at the same time?
Well, I interviewed every sailor on the ship, all 310 of them, and I got to know them. I got to know what drove them, what their behaviors were, what their motivators were. And so that understanding my people is what enabled me to create more effective teams. And I think that's what Rich has done is, you know, by the way the employees interview each other and interview new hires, they understand who they're hiring and what motivates them, and then that can help them mold the team better for a better outcome.
Let me go to Carol calling from West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Carol. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I think your guest may have just answered my question, which is how does the interviewing process work, and do you administer additional psychological evaluations such as predictive index and the like?
You mean to decide who would flourish in this sort of flat org organization? Let me pick it up with Matt. How exactly do they do that, Matt? Do they have to probe more deeply than a hierarchical organization's hiring team?
Yeah, it's slower as with the actual work itself. The interviewing process is much slower. It takes place over many weeks. And essentially what happens is because Menlo, the company that I concentrated on, is a software design company, the applicants would sit with multiple members of the team, program with them over a series of days, and then there's also a traditional interview situation. So on top of interacting with the whole team, they're also getting the you know, sitting down, and you get a list of questions that are in the Menlo booklet. It does take much more time, but as I mentioned before, I think it's important insofar as that it has to take more time to a certain extent because you're going to be working with these people day in and day out, so you have to know them pretty well.
Sherry Moss, takes more time. It sounds like any number of things could take more time. What about that? I mean, we're always told time is money, and the global economy moves so fast these days. If the flat org works more slowly, what are the implications?
I think that seems like a disadvantage on the surface if you take it from a short-term perspective. Mm-hmm. But in the longer term, if you take more time for everybody to get on board with the decisions that you're making and the process that you're going to go through, and you also have them all oriented toward a purpose, a meaning that they're striving for, like, let's make this the best ship, let's make this the best software we possibly can, and that vision is compelling, that initial slowness will translate into a strong level of commitment. Everybody will buy into the decisions that are made because they've participated, and that will result in them putting forth more effort toward the mission.
Bob in Queechy, Vermont. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So three key words that I hear over and over in this call. One is culture, one is leadership, and one is team. Culture, as Sherry just mentioned, is about developing vision, mission, values, and having folks have something to truly believe in. Leadership is ultimately about behavior. And there's a distinction between organizational chart leadership and individual leadership.
Sure.
So individual leadership is behavior. And then to engage the hearts and minds of a team, they have to have something to believe in. Thank you.
Bob, we got it right there. Thanks for that. One more. Barry, Hardwick, Vermont. Barry, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I work at a food co-op that's been operating in collective management for the past 30 years mm-hmm. or more. And we operate by departmental management. So, we believe in personal autonomy and a progressive workplace. And that's really our motivator that kind of holds us together, and personal responsibility, and we all really go at it as a team. We have very low turnover and a high level of commitment.
Barry, it sounds like it's working out well. In your case there, Sherry, there's been a lot of talk about this for a long time. Is it kicking in at the pace people thought it would? Are we migrating as a country, as a culture, as an economy to this in the main, or is this still the exception?
I think we're moving more clearly toward it, and it may not be across an entire organization, but management is local. Each manager has a different perspective and leadership style, and many managers today are learning that this type of leaderless, not powerful approach or not command and control style is working much better than the old command and control style.
Hey, Matt, how about it? Did you throw it back to the bosses in New York at New York Magazine, ask them to try it? You think they want to pick it up?
I don't think we're in any danger of having a bossless New York Magazine, but it's a nice idea.
Yeah. Captain Mike, how about the rest of the Navy? Did they pick up on it, or do they think you were crazy?
You know, the military as a whole is becoming more entrepreneurial and more flat because we have to make decisions far quicker today than we did 10 or 15 years ago. So, yes, we are heading in that direction.
Well, there is a little check-in on a long-term trend here, and it's really interesting to see the bossless company. Retired Navy Captain Mike Abershoff joining us today from St. Paul and GLS Worldwide. Thank you so much for being with us, Captain.
My pleasure.
His book is It's Your Ship. Sherry Moss at Wake Forest University. Thank you for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you.
And Matt Scher, you got us onto this in the pages of New York Magazine. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.